This is Ken Chumbly of the University of Louisville Oral History Center. The date is November 28, 1978. I'm interviewing today Mr. Alex Berman at his law office at 812 Marion E. Taylor Building. This interview is part of our Jewish Oral History Project. Mr. Berman, let's begin with the beginning. Tell me as much as you remember about your mother and your father.
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky on September 7, 1906. My father's name was Meyer, M-Y-E-R, Berman, B-E-R-M-A-N, and my mother's name was Esther, E-S-T-H-E-R, Dora, D-O-R-A, Berman. It was previously, her maiden name was Spindler, S-H-P-I-N-D-L-E-R. My parents were both born in Europe. My mother was born in Grodno, G-R-O-D-N-O. That's a part of Poland. It was a part of Poland at the time of her birth, which was in 1868. And my father, he was born in Kovno, C-O-V-N-O. That was also a part of Poland. And he was born in 1866. My parents were married in Louisville in 1888. And my father died in Louisville in 1935, and my mother died in Louisville in 1944.
How did they come to America from Poland?
Things in Poland and in most part of Europe and Russia were very desperate for the Jewish people at that time. That was during periods when they were having the pogroms, and it was a period of the czars, and they were very hostile toward the Jewish people. One of the things that especially Jews feared in Russia and the countries associated with Russia in one way or the other was serving in the armies. They had to serve in the army, and that was almost like slave labor, and it was very common for Jews in particular to try to escape those countries to avoid military service. Various means were used to escape service. First place, it was not that they were disloyal to the country where they lived. They were loyal, but these people were not treated fairly. They were mistreated, and that was why they did not want to serve. And serving in the military, according to my information, was not as we understand it in this country, where actually you do only military service, but there it was almost like slave labor, and it was called military service, but in fact it was not. And that was why these people, Jewish people, many of them, wanted to leave those countries.
Did your mother or father tell you about conditions in Poland and Russia?
They did, but not in great detail. I was one of nine children, and I was next to the youngest. Mm-hmm. And this type of thing was not of interest to me at mm-hmm. that time. And they had, my parents, I suppose, and I know, related this these stories and incidents to my older brothers and sisters, but it was not related to me in great detail, mm-hmm. except as I just indicated, that this is why these people wanted to leave.
What did your father do in Covina? You said he lived in Covina.
He lived in Covina.
He too young to work? Or?
He was a young man. He came to this country. He and a brother came to this country. My father was the eldest of eight children. Excuse me. So he and the brother next to him, whose name was Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, Berman, they came here, and as I understand it, a cousin also came along with them from Europe by the name of Simon Aedes, A-D-E-S. Simon Aedes subsequently became a very fine and respected citizen of Louisville. He was a very successful businessman and raised a fine, large family in Louisville. And my father and his brother Nathan and Simon Aedes came here about the same time. They did not have much in the way of finance. They didn't have much in the way of organizations who would receive and accept foreigners. They had all of the problems that foreigners had when they came to this country. They had problems with the language. They did not know, understand, or speak English. They had very little, if any, money. They had the problem of religious differences, are really, there was a type of persecution of people in those times, of a different religion. They were ridiculed, and there was a lot of hostility because, and the reason was that the American people did not know, they were not aware. And it's because of their own lack of knowledge about people who were different from the people in this community. It was not that they were mean people or cruel people, but that they just didn't know and didn't understand and did not have the knowledge of making these people feel comfortable in the community, although my parents did become well established in the community, and as did many people from European countries. But they were beset with many problems. It's different than the situation is today, where if people come from another country, whatever country it is, if it's Russia or Israel or Poland or Germany or Mexico. There are organizations that are either sponsored or approved federally or financed, funded federally, who will take these people under their wing. Will provide adequate housing for them, will provide schools for the children, will teach the parents to the language, will educate them. and they'll do everything to integrate these people into the mainstream of American life, which of course is a wonderful thing, but it is much different than it used to be. I feel that we do not give people of that generation, I'm speaking of those people who came into this country in the late 1800s.
Including your parents.
Including my parents, who were able to raise large families. We were 9 children, and I can name them if you want me to, starting with my oldest brother, Hyman, H-Y-M-A-N, who was born in Louisville in 1890, and he died in 1952. Next was my brother Isaac, born in 1892, died in 1960. My brother Dennis, born in 1896 and died in 1970. My brother Morris, born in 1898, died in 1963. My sister Rose, who was born in 1899, she is still lives in Louisville. She's married and lives with her husband in Louisville, Louis N. Schuster. And then my sister, Hannah, H-A-N-N-A-H, she married, she was born in 1902. She was married to Herbert E. Scher and moved to to Florida, where she's where they lived the past 50 years, and he died about 10 years ago. And then my brother William was born in 1903. Who died in 1966, and myself, I was born in 1906, and my sister, Lillian, who was the youngest, was died in 1909. She was married to Sol S. Goldberg, who died about 15 or 20 years ago. Curtis Sol was a lawyer and had passed the bar. He did not practice law, but he was in the machinery business. He and his family were pioneers in Louisville in the automobile industry, the used parts. They had a used parts business on East Market Street called the Louisville Auto Parts Company. And that was a sort of a unique business in those days. Automobiles were much rarer than they are today. But anyhow, that's it was his family. The family still runs the business.
Did you mentioned that your father, his brother, and a cousin came here late in the late 1880s. How did they get here? Did they work their way across Europe, or?
They were able to get enough money from the friends, and they left a large family over there. And they were able to get enough money together to finance a trip here. When they, you mean talk about the money to make a trip from Poland or Russia to this country, we're not talking about the same kind of money that we would be talking about today. They went, there were various types passage. There was a steerage, which was put in the bottom of the ship, and other grades. And as I understand it, they came in the very lowest class possible. And they brought with them enough food for the trip. and the little money that they could get. And then when they came to this country, there was a Jewish organization that was farmed and operated in New York. Now, I'm not sure of this name, but it seems that it's called the Hias, H-I-A-S. Now, I may not be accurate about that, but I think that there was some organization that did what they could to help the newcomers. And they would try to advise them as much as they could as to where to go in the United States to settle. They would try to keep the people from remaining in New York or Philadelphia or Baltimore, wherever they frequently arrived on the seacoast cities, and try to get them into the interior part of the country where they would be able to have a better opportunity of establishing a life for themselves.
Did your father and brothers then, or brother and cousin then, immigrate to Louisville?
Yes, they came, as I recall, as I've been told, in Baltimore. They arrived in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And then they stayed there just a short period of time, and they came to Louisville. And when they came here, they each became, tried to do what they could. Now, I do not know exactly how my father's brother, Nathan Berman, what he did, nor Mr. Simon Hades, I'm not sure, but they both, I think, went into some type of selling of merchandise. Mm-hmm. And, but I do know that my father, he immediately became what they call peddler, P-E-D-L-E-R-R-A-R. And he would go into the country with a pack on his back and call on the country people and the farmers, selling them such items as he was able to carry. That was not a very vast line of merchandise, but it consisted of clothing and I think some pots and pans and incidental items that were useful in a home. These peddlers, and this, there were many peddlers, there were many people who did this type of thing. This was not a unique business for my father, but he was one of quite a few who did that. He peddled on foot for quite some time, and thereafter he was able to get a horse and wagon. And when he did that, he was able to, of course, carry more merchandise and sell more merchandise. Mm-hmm. When they went into the country, they would be gone for a couple of days at a time because transportation was so difficult. And they would spend the night with the with the farmers, have meals with them, and stay with them, and they made many good friends this way. And many of the country people, especially, were very kind and helpful to these peddlers.
Did he operate mostly in Kentucky, or did he go into Indiana?
He operated mostly in Kentucky, and primarily in Shelby County, Shelbyville, Mount Eden, and through there. And he developed a very good business through there. In fact, when he opened up a business in Louisville, and I think that his first store was on Market Street near Preston, and this was done when he was quite a young man, and to the best of my recollection, this was done in about 1888 or thereabouts, where he first opened a store around Preston and Market in Louisville.
I guess it was just a general merchandise store.
It was just a general merchandise store, and he got a lot of trade from people in Shelby and County. Now, he kept a close contact with people from the country. First place, he liked country people, and he liked to go on farms. He liked animals, and he enjoyed looking at garden products and things of that, farm products. He just enjoyed that and enjoyed the people. And he encouraged the trade with the country people. Now, he had an opportunity in the location where he was to keep in contact with farmers, because the hay market was located in the area where his business was situated. Now, the hay market was a place on that stretched from about Brook to Preston Street on Jefferson, from Jefferson to Liberty, and every day the farmers from the adjoining area here would come to market with their wagons at that time, horse and wagons, and would bring their produce to the market. They rented a stall, and that was, the hay market was a private company, as I understand it, and they rented stalls to these people either for the day or hour. I don't know exactly how it was, but they would come in, and they would go into the stall and display their merchandise. And after they, and the people from Louisville and the adjoining areas would come there to shop every morning to buy their vegetables and fruits. After they, many of these people, country people, would, after they sold their merchandise, they would have the money and then come over and trade with my father. He later moved to a store on Market between 2nd and 3rd. It was at 216 and 218 West Market Street. And this is where I was born in 1906. And by that time, he was a pretty well-established merchant. And he continued to attract country trade, and he concentrated on that. I remember very well that when I was growing up, just a very young child, it would be my job, and one that I enjoyed doing, would be to visit the hay market at about 4 o'clock in the morning and distribute little memorandum books to each of the farmers, go through the aisles and the farm rows, the rows rather, where the farmers were displaying their merchandise, and pass out these memorandum books. Often there would be a handbill in them of some kind of special sale, and giving them to the farmers and inviting them to come by, mm-hmm, the store. And the store The name was Meyer Berman, B-E-R-M-A-N, and the emblem that he used was a bear, and written across the bear is the word man, M-A-N, Berman. Many people used to pronounce it. In fact, the name was pronounced as though it was spelled B-E-A-R-M-A-N, but actually it was Berman, B-E-R-M-A-N. But anyhow, that was the emblem that he used, and we would go to the market at least once a week to distribute either these books, and the farmers would look forward to it. It had information especially interesting to farmers. It would give the weights of various products per bushel or barrel, and metric measurements. And
is it like an almanac?
Sort of like an almanac, but very concise and compact, where they could keep their records of what they bought and sold. Mm-hmm. And but they looked forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, about 2 years ago, I was settling an estate for a man, and he came in. He said, "I believe I have something that you might be interested in." And he handed me one of these little books that his father had received in 1921.
Hmm.
And still kept it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to receive that. But anyhow, that was the type of advertising that was done. Now, after our business was at 216 and 218, we expanded, and my father wanted to enlarge the business, so we then bought the buildings known as 220 and 222 West Market. That's between 2nd and 3rd on the south side of the street. I might say in passing that while we were at 216 and 218, right behind us was a very famous playhouse. It was called the Buckingham Theater, which was on Jefferson Street, and it backed into the backyard, our backyard, and many of the fine actors and actresses, and of course, especially comedians, got their start at the Buckingham Theater. It was a place that was not known especially for for opera or the highest type of cultural entertainment, but for the comedians and that type, it was it had a national reputation, and I was quite popular with the young boys of my age, because I would invite them to come over to my backyard and play. We lived with the business. We lived upstairs. And I invited them to come over to the yard to play. And we then had the opportunity to peek through the wooden fence that was at the back of our yard, and watch the actresses, especially as they were getting ready to go on stage, because the back of the stage was separated, adjoined our property, but was separated by an alley that ran from 2nd to 3rd Street. So that was quite an experience to have that view, that of the actresses. The neighborhood where we live at 216 and 218 was not entirely a business area, although it was primarily a business area. But a few families, including ourselves, lived above the store. When we moved and bought the property at 220 and 222, there was no residence above the store, so we then moved to 4th and Hill Street into the Belvedere Apartments, and that was a very fine residential area. At the time that we built the store at 220 and 222, my father had associated with him all of the sons, including myself. We were six boys, mm-hmm. and all of us were in the business. My three sisters, they were not in the business, nor were their husbands in the business. But it was considered unusual, and many people admired the fact that it was possible for a father and six sons to conduct one business and to do it without any friction and with this had advantages and disadvantages. We had great respect for our parents and great respect for our father, and the disadvantage of six boys being in business with the father is that the boys did not have much opportunity for self-expression, and because we had such respect for our father and his opinions that all decisions were made by him, although our opinions were asked for and sought, and we gave them, but we were always careful to give them within the in the manner that he would approve. And as a result of that, the business did not get the new ideas that it should have had with that many people identified with it. And line of along these lines, when this building was built, it wasn't built from the ground up. It was two buildings that had been occupied by a furniture store. They were remodeled and made very modern for that time. Elevator was placed in there. We had the newest type of heat, the newest kind of lighting. There were four floors, and that was the, and we handled men, women, and children's clothing and furnishings. And that was the largest store at that time that was owned and operated by an Orthodox Jewish person. There were other stores, larger department stores, but they were owned by German Jews and Reform Jews. But this store was the largest retail store owned by an Orthodox Jew in Louisville at that time. Some of the things that were done to encourage business and unique sales promotion were what was a practice around the Easter holidays. And many people still remember that we would give away a live rabbit with each boy's suit. And this would be publicized weeks before Easter. And the parents would come with the children, the boys, and buy a suit in order to get a live rabbit. There were many children, boys, who did not know what kind of suit they were getting, but knew exactly what kind of rabbit they wanted. And they were more concerned about the rabbit than the suit. But there was a great sales promotion. Also, we had a live bear that we owned, and had a man haul it in a wagon, Parson wagon, and visit the schools where the bear would be exhibited. It had a few tricks that it did, and it became quite popular.
Were these your father's ideas or the boys' ideas?
Well, this was the father's and the boys'. There was not any differentiation. The boys had, you know, could suggest and do whatever they wanted, but they just cooperated. There was a great cooperation between everybody. And the business progressed, and it was a very successful business until the depression of 1930, and like so many other businesses, it had its problems. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the neighborhood of Market Street between 2nd and 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, this was primarily businesses, and with some residents above the stores. The places that that surrounded us across the street was what was known as the German Insurance Company. No, German, I think the German Bank. And then and during the war, the First World War, that the name of that bank was changed from the German Bank to the Liberty National Bank. That was a that bank was very well-known and popular bank until turn that on. I thought I'd get that little bit there. I'll count it back just that last. The bank, after change to the Liberty National Bank, continued as a very successful bank, but later on, during the Depression, like all of the banks, it had its problems, but did solve them, and later moved, of course this is recent, moved to its location on Jefferson Street between 4th and 5th. also in that neighborhood, and they are still there, are Levy Brothers on 3rd and Market. Colonel Fred Levy was the president of that company at the time, and that was considered the bright spot of Louisville. It used to be a saying that when they wanted to say that something, to describe something glamorous and glittering, they'd always say it's lit up like Levy Brothers. And they had that image of having a bright, beautiful store, which it was. Colonel Fred Levy and my father were quite good friends, and they foresaw the need for making parking available on Market Street. So they jointly developed a parking lot on Main Street between 3rd and 2nd, the purpose being to serve the merchants in that area. And a corporation was formed called the Main Street Parking Company, I believe, and each of the merchants purchased stock in that corporation, and the parking lot still remains, but it is practically, but all the stock now is practically owned by Levy Brothers, and it's used for their parking lot.
Was the, you said Colonel Fred Levy, was he the founder of the store?
Well, I think that Colonel Fred Levy and one of his brother, some of his brothers were the founders of the store.
Was Colonel an honorary title?
It was an honorary title, but Colonel Fred Levy was one of the outstanding leaders of the Jewish community. A very fine man, articulate, wealthy and prestigious, and also handsome. And he was, for that family, still owns the store.
Is that the building over here, is that the original building?
Yes, the building that is on 3rd and Market is the original building. Now, over on the other corner, on the south east corner of 3rd and Market, was Lovin' Hearts. That was an old business, men's clothing, fine clothing store, and family-owned. They were there for about, well, they were there for many years, but they left that location about 6 or 7 years ago, and the business, which is now owned and operated by by Lee Grossman, who is a grandson of the founder. They are now located in Oxmoor, and has remained one of the fine clothing stores. One of the things that I remember very vividly on talking about that store being at 3rd Market was the sessions held by the Salvation Army on the 3rd Street, on the corner of 3rd and Market. Every Saturday night, the Salvation Army with the band would appear, and with their speakers and speakers and the other participants in the program playing music, the songs, religious songs. They were very beautiful and it was very impressive. They would have the drum lying flat and requesting people to contribute money for their program, for their purposes. And I can recall how crowded it was when this group would come. How the people would crowd around to listen to the talks and the music and to participate in the singing that they sometimes had. The Saturday night on Market Street 50 years ago was a place of great excitement and great crowds. From noon Saturdays until 10 o'clock at night, people were almost shoulder to shoulder between, say, Brook Street and 4th Street, people shopping and socializing. Primarily doing their shopping. The merchants waited for Saturdays to determine whether it was going to be, whether the week would be a successful one or not a successful one, depending upon how much business there was on Saturday night. Determined whether the week was good business-wise. The street also had a lot of other little shops on it, a very famous candy store. Rudolph and Bowers was located on the same street. Next to Rudolph and Bowers, there was a dentist's office, Dr. Harry Galanter. He had his office on the, second floor of a building, and his family lived up above the store. The emblem that he used was a big replica of a tooth. It was about 4 feet high, and he had that at the doorway to, leading up to his office. And there was a controversy between him and the Dental Association of whether having that tooth was unprofessional advertising, but he did prevail, and he continued displaying the tooth and practicing there and for many years. later, he moved his office to one of the office buildings. One of my first recollections of police security are related to the Market Street area. Between the second and third on the street where we lived, or where we had our business, there was a man called Colonel Larkin, L-A-R-K-I-N, who was called a merchant police. And his duty, was to go up and down Market Street and part of 4th Street to feel the doors and look around the property, businesses, and make sure that everything was secure. The unique part about the operation was that he had two beautiful German Shepherd police dogs that he used in his work, and they would go into the stores or up the stairs or wherever necessary to search out any prowlers or any problems. We do not associate security problems with 50 or 60 years ago, but they did exist at that time. It is also interesting to note that after Colonel Larkin retired, that his business was taken over by his son, who incidentally used to accompany his father on these surveys that he made of the businesses. And his son learned the business and remained in the field of security and became the sheriff of Jefferson County, Jim Larkin, who was our sheriff recently, had done that type of work, and he carried on the tradition of his father.
What was your father's relationship to other merchants, particularly, say, Reformed Jewish merchants?
The relationship of my father with the other merchants in the community was excellent. Mm-hmm. My father was very gentle, courteous, intelligent, and fair person. He was an officer of the congregation which he belonged.
What congregation was that?
It was originally B'nai Jacob. That was located, the first recollection I have, was on Jefferson Street between Preston and Jackson, across the street from a firehouse. But my father was treasurer of that congregation for many years, and was always an officer. From my earliest recollection to the time that he passed away, he was an officer of the congregation. He was also on the board of the Jewish Children's Home. He was a member of the Odd Fellows fraternal organization. He was a member of and an officer of the Market Street Merchants Association. But his relationship with the merchants was, and with all people, was excellent.
What about in the overall community, the Jewish community? Were the Reformed Jews and the Orthodox Jews coexisting peacefully?
There wasn't as much integration, is not exactly the word, but they were not as close 50, 60 years ago as they are today. And there are many reasons for that. I suppose that that the economy is one of the differences. Back in those days, the European Jews, and I distinguish those from German Jews, I get they're all from Europe, but at Jews from countries other than Germany came here later, and the German Jews were pretty well established in the community and had gained some financial success and I guess social success too. It took some time before the other Jews from Russia or Poland or those countries could attain any financial stature. But in the past 25 years, they have become more secure financially than were the German Jews.
Would you ever would you say that there was ever any hostility between the two, or?
I don't think that there was any hostility as such between the two, but their cultures were a little different, and the German Jews just felt that they were superior socially and financially. Mm-hmm. And financially they were.
Mm-hmm.
But the Orthodox Jews, they participated in everything in the community. They established synagogues, they established Hebrew schools, they had, well, they participated in the construction of the Jewish hospital, and they did all of these things. For establishing the Jewish people as a whole, there was always great unity in this community.
Mm-hmm.
All Jewish segments of Jewish community cooperated to make this a very well-rounded Jewish community. This was the smallest city in the country that had a Jewish hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Supported by the Jewish community. The what we now know as the Jewish Community Center used to be known as the YMHA, and it was one of the earliest in the country and one of the best in the country. There are many leaders of YMHA groups in other parts of the country who were from Louisville, who got their training in Louisville YMHA.
Do you think among the Reformed Jews there was greater effort to become assimilated into American culture, that is to perhaps shed some Jewishness?
I don't think so. I don't think that they did it intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they did it intentionally. It may have happened,
mm-hmm.
but not as a something that they were wittingly doing.
Mm-hmm.
But circumstances and conditions may have created that, may have necessitated it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess that the one who gets to a community first has to adjust himself to those conditions and situations, mm-hmm. and that exist and are advanced when others come in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but the all segments of the Jewish community are well aligned with each other today.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that there were so many differences, especially financial, that separates all people.
Mm-hmm.
which does not exist today. Many of our people who 50 or 60 years ago were the wealthy people of the community are not the wealthy people of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And those who came here with nothing and who had nothing are now more financially endowed than others. So I don't think you can generalize on that anymore.
What about, you mentioned that the Orthodox people, the Orthodox Jews, established Hebrew schools and synagogues and the like when they arrived here. From your experience with your family, with your Orthodox family, was Orthodoxy, was Jewish tradition, was that whole culture emphasized by your parents?
Well, it was emphasized, and we practiced Orthodoxy as well as we could, and we still do. But, for example, on holidays, on Rosh Hashanah, that's the New Year, and then Yom Kippur, that's the Day of Atonement. There, the New Year, there's 2 days observed, and all of the Orthodox businesses were closed
mm-hmm.
for 2 days, and then on Yom Kippur they were all closed. Now, most of the Reform businesses were closed 50, 60 years ago on those days. Now, there were some, just a few, very few, that who conducted their businesses. But all of the Orthodox businesses closed. I mean, you, on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, you'd walk through along Market Street, which were where all of the, many of the Jewish stores were located, they would be almost completely closed, the whole block.
Mm-hmm.
Or on Preston, well, of course, on Preston is where the Jewish delicatessens and grocery, the actual Jewish businesses that served the Jewish community were located.
Mm-hmm.
On Market Street, it was not like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of small stores, small merchants and larger merchants, but those stores would be closed.
Mm-hmm.
And with the exception of a couple that would not be closed,
mm-hmm.
there were a few.
This is Ken Chumbly of the University of Louisville Oral History Center. The date is January the 5th, 1979, and I'm interviewing for the second time Mr. Alex Berman, and a Louisville attorney, at his office in the Marion E. Taylor Building. Mr. Berman is an attorney. All right, we're on then.
In the period that I grew up in Louisville, there were not a great number of young Jewish people going into professions.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the young generation, my generation at that time, we had planned to remain in business with our families because, as I said before, many of the Jewish community, a great part of the Jewish community, was engaged in business. But as time went on, small businesses were not doing so well, especially during the time of the Depression. I would say beginning around the 1930s or thereabout, businesses were becoming less attractive, and Jewish young people were starting to look toward professions. Prior to that time, there had been, it was difficult for Jewish boys to get into some type of professional schools, whether it was coincidence or a plan, I do not know, but there were very few students enrolled, for example, in engineering schools. Mm-hmm. And even when they did to get into those schools, the prospects for their future was not very good. Mm-hmm. Likewise, there was always a difficulty getting into medical school. And as a result, there were not a great number of Jewish applicants accepted in the medical schools. There was a form of a quota, although that cannot be definitely or officially said or proven, and I certainly do not want to be the person who is saying that there was a quota, a planned quota, but in effect that's what it was.
I know, for instance, that there was some kind of quota system at the U of L Medical School, because a prominent Jewish physician in town told me that.
Yes. Well,
I don't know whether it was above board or whether it was a stated on the books kind of policy, or whether it was just sort of...
That's correct. And the same was true. There was, I don't think it was quite the case in law school.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, around that time, beginning around 1930, I believe that going to college, professional college for young people became on the upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that one of the reasons for that was that big corporations were starting to take over, and a lot of the businesses were having difficulty. Small neighborhood stores, the papa and mama stores, were beginning to have problems, and were not as attractive to young people as they had been in the past. We, of course, noticed that trend that they continued to grow, where small businesses closed down. There, as I said earlier, there were many, especially Jewish people, who had small grocery stores and hardware stores, clothing, jewelry stores, and such as that, and did very well.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, and then we got into the period of the Depression, where many people lost their businesses, young people started looking elsewhere for their future. Also, so as a result, I think that many of us went into professional schools.
What were the effects of the Depression on your father's business? As I recall, he was in a kind of general mercantile business.
Yes, he had a very large men and women's clothing store. There was one of the large stores in the city, and during the Depression, we suffered like everybody else, and the business was practically destroyed. And as a result, we had to sell the building that we had owned on Market Street and move into smaller quarters, different locations. We had been on Market between 2nd and 3rd for many years, and then we moved to a store on Market between 1st and Brook Street. And from that point on, the business continued to decline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You all were living above the store in both at both locations?
No. No, we had, when we moved to 220, and we first had a business at 216 and 218, mm-hmm. West Market, and we lived above the store there, and that was a rented building.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought the property adjoining, which was 220 and 222,
mm-hmm.
and there were no living quarters there.
Yeah.
It was the building was remodeled extensively and became a modern building for those days.
Mm-hmm.
It had an elevator and that type of thing, passenger elevator, and we lost that building and
mm-hmm.
went to smaller places. The business declined. So, also during that period of time, many people had bought real estate. Now, my family, and it was true of many people in that. With the same background as my parents and of mine, where they would buy a small business place or a little piece of investment property,
mm-hmm.
and as a result of... so the people at that time, with the same background as my family, bought real estate, not expensive real estate, but small houses, and rented them, and had an income. And as a result, it was common that when the head of the house would pass away, that he usually would leave a couple of little cottages or business places that produce enough income where the widow could get along pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It was not until the last 20 years that wives worked outside of the business owned by the husband.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a typical situation with Jewish families. Seldom did the wife work out. But there was a joint where the husband had a small business, the wife would frequently help. And there was nothing wrong with it, but it just was not the custom for women to work away from the home. They felt it was their duty to look after the children and to maintain the home properly. And I believe that that might be one of the reasons why the records for delinquency among Jewish families and Jewish children was historically lower among Jewish communities and Jewish people than with the general community.
So your parents by investing a bit in real estate in these properties, were able to cushion a lot of the blows from the Depression?
Well, that's true. During the Depression, much of the real estate was lost too.
True.
Because people were unable to pay rent, and there were mortgages on the property, and as a result, we couldn't pay the mortgages.
Uh-huh.
And had to give the property back. But of course, some of it was salvaged and managed to get through the Depression.
Tell me now, you mentioned earlier that business wasn't a lucrative profession. A lot of times people went into business because their parents had businesses. You mentioned, though, that young Jews were beginning to enter the professions. You chose law. Where did you go to law school? Or?
I got all of my education in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Went to University of Louisville Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And finished in 1928 and took the bar examination in 1928 and started practicing that same year. And I was 21 years of age when I started practicing.
That's rather young, isn't it? Or was it young then? Or was
you had to be 21 before you could be admitted.
Mm-hmm.
I was admitted at 21.
Mm-hmm.
And have been practicing continuously since that time. It's interesting to note that since the shift to professions, now I was the first of my generation to enter a profession.
Mm-hmm.
That is, such as law, medicine, dentistry, or engineering. But, and I don't know of any others who were in a profession at all. But I'm sure that I was the only one in those professions, first in those professions,
mm-hmm.
Mentioned. Now, since then, my oldest brother, who is now deceased, his son, one of them was a lawyer, and another one graduated from University of Louisville's Speed Engineering School, and then went to Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
As an engineer, and he finished as a graduated from Columbia in business administration and was associated with Booz Allen Hamilton, a very fine efficiency type of company. Another brother who they were the children of my brother, oldest brother, Hyman Berman, and the one who was a lawyer, Donald Berman. He practiced in Chicago. He is now deceased. My other brother, Ike, he was unmarried, no children. Then there was Dennis Berman, my brother. He's now deceased. He has a son, Harris Berman, who's a lawyer. He has three daughters, each of whom took teaching as professions. And one of the daughters is married to a lawyer, Bob Kahn. He's my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And one of Dennis's daughters, who is a teacher, now one of her sons is recently become a lawyer.
How did your parents feel about your decision not to, to go to law school and not to go into business?
Oh, well, they approved of it. They encouraged it, yes.
Were the professions considered special, kind of cut above the ordinary?
Well, I think that going to college in itself was uh-huh. a little above the average. Mm-hmm. Today it would not be so, but mm-hmm. then we're talking about 50 years ago, mm-hmm. Longer than 50 years ago. It was a little unusual at that time. Mm-hmm. And my family encouraged it. The whole family were educated. All mm-hmm. the nine children all graduated from high school, some college. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to show how the change from a business background, how we just changed to profession, and I think this is pretty general. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just in our family, but we were always a family of merchants, mm-hmm. and now there's not a member of the family who is a merchant, except one. Mm-hmm. I have a nephew by marriage. He married brother's daughter. Mm-hmm. His name is Lee Grossman, and they own Love and Hearts, mm-hmm. a men's mm-hmm. store. That's an old business, and he's the only really merchant left of a very large family. They were all merchants before, mm-hmm. doing clothing business and liquor business and drug stores and the very types of businesses. But now there's a profession. Now my son, I have a son who's a doctor. He doesn't practice here. He practices in Chicago, Philip Berman. He is a gastroenterologist, and he went to Vanderbilt University for his undergraduate work, and then took his medical training in Louisville. My daughter, for example, she graduated as a teacher and now lives in St. Louis. Married an engineer, Robert Banaschek, and they live there with their family. He is a consulting mechanical engineer. But each of my brothers or sisters have professional people. We're nine, and they've been a big development in that area.
As the first ones into a profession, surely you met some kind of resistance. As you said, historically or traditionally perhaps, your family and Jews were merchants. But we're now seeing, as you're recounting it, Jews beginning to go into the professions heretofore mainly occupied by WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, perhaps. What kind of reception did you receive?
Well, the reception that I received was very good. Mm-hmm. Personally, I have not had any disabling or discouraging signs of prejudice. Mm-hmm. I know it exists because those are not things that you can actually put your finger on, but you do feel it, but never to the extent where it disturbed me personally too mm-hmm. much. I regretted that the situation existed, mm-hmm. Tried to at all times to conduct myself in such a manner, in my affairs in such a manner. manner that I would not justify any anti-Semitism or criticism against me personally or against me as a Jew. I was associated, shared office space with Protestant lawyer for about 30 years, a man by the name of John C. Wycliffe. He died about 10 years ago. We had a very fine relationship. Respected me for living and doing as I did, and I, of course, respected him likewise. He was much older than I. Very helpful to me in giving me some legal guidance that has been helpful. As far as my personal association with non-Jewish people in the profession, it was quite close and always on a very friendly, fine basis.
In your class at the law school, do you recall how many Jews were classmates of yours?
Yes, in my class, we had a 50th class reunion last year, I think it was. And the three Jewish students who were in that class were at the reunion. And they were Sam Steinfeld, who was recently a member of the Supreme Court of the state of Kentucky. It was known as the Court of Appeals while he was on the bench. Now, Frank Garlov was also a member of that class. He was not at that reunion, but he was a member. So it was Sam Steinfeld, Frank Garlov, and I were the three Jewish members of that class, and were all still practicing law. Sam is doing more teaching than actual practicing. Sam Steinfeld's father was a lawyer, and Sam's son is a lawyer, a very fine young lawyer.
Do both of them live in town? Or?
Yes, they both live in town. Also, Frank Garlov, who is in that class, has a son now who is a lawyer, Mac Garlov. And the three of us were the Jewish students, and we got along very well with all the teachers and the other students, and there was no anti-Semitism, no hostility at all.
You were graduated, you said, in 1928, 2 years before the Depression, I guess, began formally. Did you enter private practice, or by yourself, or did you?
Yes, I started practicing, and I was supposed to go into the office with very fine lawyer, by the name of. There were two brothers, Joseph Seligman and Alfred Seligman. They were excellent lawyers. And I was supposed to start practicing with them. But in the meantime, I was approached by a lawyer by the name of Rosenberg, Rosenberg, who was not a native Louisvillian, but who came here and suddenly developed a tremendous criminal practice. And a big part of his practice was defending bootleggers. Bootlegging was a big illegal industry at that time, and defending them was a very profitable type of business for lawyers. But anyhow, this man had a tremendous practice in that field, and he invited me to come into his office, which I did, and which I later regretted. He was doing very well for himself financially, but I was doing some of the work for him, which I did not enjoy doing, and I did not make very much money doing it. But that, I suppose, was my fault and not his. I just didn't like that type of practice, and didn't like the association with people who were bootleggers and engaged in illegal activities. So I stayed there a couple of years, and then I had office space with a lawyer by the name of Joseph Solinger, who was a very nice man, and he had a civil practice, and I stayed with him, I guess, about 5 or 6 years, and then I moved with Mr. Wycliffe, who had offices in the old Global Trust building. He was a real estate specialist. That's all that he did was real estate work and matters related to real estate law. He was considered an expert in this field, and a very fine man, and I stayed with him until he died in about 1968, thereabouts, I don't remember exactly when. But after he passed away, I stayed in the Louisville Trust building for a year or two, after which I joined the partnership then of, it had the same name as it has now, Kallstein, Postburn, Feynman & Kahn, and I merged my practice with theirs and became a member of the partnership. In addition to those in the firm name, since then, two young men have become partners, Alvin Wax and Martin Snyder, both very fine young men. Now, all of the members of the partnership have roots in Louisville, except Joe Feynman, who came here from West Virginia. He and his wife and family, a very fine family, nice family, they become very active in the community. He is presently president of the Jewish Community Center, and but other than that, the rest are all practically native Louisvillians.
What kind of legal work are you doing now, and have you done since you left Mr. Wycliffe? Mostly
well,
real estate?
All the work, practically all of my practice is in estate work, probate, mm-hmm. In the state and real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's a general practice. I do some carpet work and occasionally have a personal injury claim,
mm-hmm.
That type of thing that involves court work. I've always turned over to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy court work. I prefer the office
mm-hmm.
law office work.